It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Burrow Hill in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 41 degrees right now. Southeast winds to 16, gusting to 25 at the airport. They're calling for more rain, then just a slight chance of showers after 3 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies today with a high near 44 and south winds to 25. Could gust as high as 40. Coming up on the Midday Report. Follow up on a Juneau police officer shooting through a trailer home. Reactions from our congressional delegation on the Ukraine situation. And an Alaska connection to Ukraine. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Janine Herbst. Thousands of Russian troops are mounting an amphibious landing in southern Ukraine, that according to a senior defense official. Meanwhile, Ukrainian forces are fighting back in the capital and other cities. NPR's Tom Bowman has more.
The senior official said the Russian amphibious forces are expected to head northeast to the Donbas region, where Ukrainian forces are fighting Russian troops. Elsewhere, the official said the Russian invasion has slowed, with Ukrainian forces putting up a strong fight in the capital, Kyiv, and the city of Kharkiv to the east. Still, the Russians have only employed about one-third of its 190,000 invasion force. The Russians have fired some 200 ballistic and cruise missiles so far, and some of them have struck civilian residential areas. The U.S. has no official reports yet on either civilian or military casualties. The U.S. has a sketchy view of the invasion because it has halted surveillance flights. Tom Bowman, NPR News.
And the White House says the United States will sanction Russian President Vladimir Putin and Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says Biden spoke with the EU's Ursula von der Leyen before making that decision. And President Biden introduced Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson as his nominee for Supreme Court. This happening at the White House today. NPR's Franco Ordonez reports Biden cited the historic nature of her nomination.
President Biden described Judge Jackson as a consensus builder with a, quote, pragmatic understanding that the law must work for the American people. If confirmed, Jackson would become the first black woman to serve on the court.
For too long, our government, our courts, haven't looked like America. And I believe it's time that we have a court that reflects the full talents and greatness of our nation.
Jackson is currently a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals. Biden nominated her to succeed Justice Stephen Breyer, who announced his retirement earlier this year. In accepting the nomination, Jackson said she hopes to inspire future generations of Americans. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, The White House.
As cases of the coronavirus continue to fall around the country, the CDC is significantly loosening federal mask-wearing guidelines. That means most people will no longer be advised to wear masks in indoor public settings, including schools. Dr. Greta Massetti is with the agency's COVID-19 response team.
Today, we're also updating our recommendations for schools. Since July 2021, CDC recommended universal masking in schools, no matter what level of impact COVID-19 was having on the community. With this update, CDC will now only recommend universal school masking in communities at the high level.
The new metrics will still consider caseloads, but also take into account hospitalizations and local hospital capacity. Preliminary closing numbers on Wall Street. Everything's higher. The Dow's up 834. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The U.S. Coast Guard says one of its cutters boarded a commercial fishing boat near Kodiak on February 19th and seized fish that had been illegally caught about 12 miles northeast of Kodiak Island. The Coast Guard cutter Bailey Barco boarded the 32-foot fishing vessel Competition, which is based out of Homer, the agency said in a Wednesday release. Aboard, Coast Guard officers discovered 18 halibut and one ling cod that were allegedly retained during a closed fishery. They issued violations for the fish, as well as for having an expired emergency position indicating radio beacon hydrostatic release and not having a current fishing vessel safety examination. The illegal catch was seized and transferred to NOAA law enforcement officers in Kodiak, who are responsible for investigating violations in federal waters. Alaska's congressional delegation has condemned Russia's attack on Ukraine and called out Russian President Vladimir Putin's aggression. Senator Lisa Murkowski said the country must unite around severe sanctions.
What Putin has done needs to be condemned in the strongest, harshest possible terms. There needs to be punishment. There needs to be accountability.
Murkowski also says President Biden should impose sanctions on Russian energy. In their first news releases on Thursday, none of Alaska's all-Republican delegation criticized Biden. Their focus was on Putin. Congressman Don Young called the Russian leader an authoritarian thug and said America doesn't back down from dictators. Senator Dan Sullivan said Putin is driven by historical grievances and paranoid about neighboring democracies. Sullivan did not grant an interview request, and later, in a videotaped statement, Sullivan did find fault with Biden.
The President of the United States said his administration is doing everything they can to help with energy independence and make sure energy prices are not skyrocketing because of this crisis. That's not true. Mr. President, you need to do much more. You need to get your boot off the neck of American energy producers.
Sullivan said the administration should proceed with development in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and elsewhere. Opponents of drilling in the Arctic Refuge say production would be years away and would not serve to counter the current price spike. Governor Dunleavy said on Twitter Thursday morning that he differs with Biden on domestic energy production, but now is the time for unity against Russia's attack on democracy.
The street in the Mendenhall Valley where...
The Federal Department of Transportation will have to pay more than $360 million to the municipality of Anchorage due to various failures with the Port of Alaska's expansion project. A judge issued the order yesterday. The municipality sued the federal government over the various design and construction defects with the port project more than a decade ago. In December, the United States Court of Federal Claims ruled in favor of Anchorage, stating that because of the various defects, the DOT's Maritime Administration had breached its contract with the city. In a statement, Mayor Dave Bronson applauded the judge's decision to award the municipality damages and said, quote, "Though this is a positive outcome, we must remember that the appeals process could take up to a year and that the final amount to be paid is unresolved." A man who a Juneau police officer shot at Tuesday night says he's home safe and wants to share his side of the story. KTOO's Jeremy Shea has this report.
The street in the Mendenhall Valley, where a Juneau police officer fired his gun on February 22nd, is lined with trailer homes. The man who police shot at is standing on his porch, having a cigarette. There's a light post nearby with a sign warning to watch for children.
Yeah, my name is Art Whitney, and I'm pissed.
Whitney was at the end of the driveway when police started shooting. An eyewitness said she saw exactly where an officer had fired from that night. It's about 250 feet away. Whitney is a Navy veteran, small and gaunt with a long beard. He says he recently got home after spending two nights at Bartlett Regional Hospital, where police took him after the shooting.
Maybe I saw a shrink, but I think they were all counselors.
Mm-hmm. Just lots of talking, or what?
Just talking. How are you feeling about every hour? Mm-hmm. And blood tests, you know, the normal routine, I guess.
Whitney takes me back to that night. He says he was shopping online and realized he had fallen for some kind of scam and lost thousands of dollars. He says he was suicidal, or at least acting suicidal.
It was just a desperate plea for help.
Police say their initial contact was a call from a family member who said a man was threatening to harm himself. The family member also told police he had a gun at home. Whitney says he gave his gun to a roommate and waited outside to meet the police. He says he was talking on the phone with his daughter when he heard shouting at the far end of the street. At first, He didn't know they were police.
And then they lit me up with their flashlights. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I hear this guy shout, "He's got a gun." Bang, bang, bang.
He wasn't hit, but police said two occupied trailers were. Police said one shot went into a bedroom window. Someone got a minor cut on broken glass. Whitney dropped to the ground, and police cuffed him. Somewhere in the mix, he says he heard neighbors repeatedly shout that he did not have a gun. According to Whitney, he wasn't armed and wasn't doing anything threatening, just talking on the phone.
They got to tell me how in the hell they can tell if I had a gun from, what, I thought, at least 100 yards away,
right,
in dark.
Right.
You know, come on. I mean, geez, I couldn't even see them. So anyway, it's not quite true, all of it.
He says police searched his room in the trailer he lives in.
Yeah, and here's the weirdest part. I could get my gun back. I didn't have to surrender my weapon. That's the bottom line. I did not have to surrender my weapon.
His phone, however, was taken as evidence. Whitney says he feels safe now and is working on getting some follow-up counseling. He also learned after the shooting that he may be able to recover the money he lost through federal deposit insurance. He says he's not aware of if he's in any trouble. Oh, and Whitney says there's at least one more thing the police got wrong. They said he was 65 years old. He won't be 65 until July. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Alaskans have been watching Russia's invasion into Ukraine unfold from thousands of miles away this week. But for some in Kenai and Soldotna, the news hit closer to home. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has this story.
There were no Ukrainian schools in Violetta Straits town growing up. She spoke Russian at a Russian school in the Donetsk region of Ukraine. But she says when she was old enough to start teaching, she taught at her city's first Ukrainian school as it was opening. And not long after that, she worked toward Ukrainian independence from the Soviet Union. Today, she's watching from Kenai as Russia attacks her country, and she says she's worried.
My biggest fear is that Russians always wanted to see Ukraine as a younger brother, basically.
Straight is from what's now the Donetsk People's Republic, a separatist region within Ukraine. It's part of the area that Russia declared independent from Ukraine earlier this week before launching a full-scale invasion into the country. Strait moved to Alaska with her husband in 1999 and settled in Kenai, where she's a classroom aide. Her relatives, though, are still overseas.
All my family is still in Ukraine. Some are on occupied territories and some are on freshly occupied territories and some are on those that are not occupied yet. And hopefully they will not be occupied.
She's been following news on Facebook and a Ukrainian news channel and getting updates from her mom every day, sometimes just a sentence to let her know she's okay. Many Ukrainians are evacuating, but others are worried if they leave, there'll be nothing to come back to. Straight says her mom and some of the members of her congregation in Ukraine decided to stay.
And she said that most of the people are older people. They cannot be on a bus and living on the bus for 2 or 3 days trying to figure out where they go. So they all decided to stay, and they just hope for better, for peace.
Grigory Weissenberg is a retired Russian and world history teacher from Moldova, living in Soldotna. He was in Ukraine last year, visiting a group of former students for his 70th birthday. They spent time in the capital, Kyiv.
You could sense the freedom. It was nothing like a former Soviet republic. I mean, I returned back, and I actually, if it wasn't for this invasion, I planned this year another trip to Kyiv.
One of the students he was with on that trip called him Thursday.
Today, in the morning, a former student of mine, one of those students, she called me on WhatsApp, and she was crying and just wanted to share with me her frustration. So it's personal, you know, for me now.
Weissenberg says he's been watching the news nonstop. He also knows what it's like to live under Russian control. The first year he left Soviet-controlled Moldova to teach on the Kenai Peninsula was 1991, the year the Soviet Union dissolved. And as a history teacher, he says it's really important for people tuning into this week's news to rewind the tape.
I think the news that I've been watching, I like the coverage. The only thing, let me go back then to my idea, so to say, I would suggest that Americans try to put more history behind the news.
He says that's critical, both for understanding what's happening in Eastern Europe today and to fight the misinformation coming from the Kremlin. But he says it's also necessary to zoom in and understand the human toll. He likes to say history is personal. His home country, Moldova, borders Ukraine.
I mean, the current government in Moldova is very nervous. But that invasion, of course, sends some chills down the spine.
It's certainly personal for the Ukrainians in Kenai. Violetta Strait says the Ukrainian women she knows in the area are all coping differently with the news as it comes.
There are different opinions, but most of them are really shocked. Most of them are seeing it as invasion. Some are more proactive and try to send money and try to spread the news and try to talk to others. And some people are just kind of watching and inside being numb.
She says she can't look away from what's happening now. She was in Ukraine when the country was fighting for its independence, spreading information to people there before the referendum vote in 1991, and beginning her teaching career as the Soviet Union dissolved.
And I think that's why I feel like I'm involved a lot.
She kept up the work since coming to the U.S., doing some translation for a Ukrainian journalist to fight propaganda. She and her husband returned to Ukraine to do missionary work and visit family, though she worries if Russia takes control, she won't be able to go back. She says she'd like people to think globally, especially in a small, seemingly faraway community like Kenai. She says apathy, on the other hand, is dangerous.
Turn on your brain, think, and not be indifferent.
When it comes down to it, she says, the world isn't all that big. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
U.S. Army Alaska is sending convoys of military vehicles over the Parks and Richardson highways in preparation of a big training exercise to be held next month on ranges around Fort Greely. And Army officials say they'll let the public know when those long, slow-moving convoys will be on the road. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Convoys of military vehicles are already on the move, hauling equipment and personnel from Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson to Fort Wainwright and from Wainwright to the Donnelly Training Area just south of Fort Greely. That's where a large-scale training exercise involving up to 10,000 military personnel will be conducted from March 9th through the 24th.
There will be convoy traffic leading up to the exercise and after the exercise as we get everybody moved back.
U.S. Army Alaska spokesperson John Pinnell says numerous longer convoys will begin traveling south on the Richardson Highway beginning next week. They'll be dispatched from Fort Wainwright in groups of 10 to 15 vehicles, each traveling 150 feet apart every 30 minutes or so to keep them spaced apart. And they'll be traveling slowly, about 25 miles an hour.
So from the 7th to about the 14th. Is going to be the big push for a lot of vehicles.
Andy Whitish is the Safety and Risk Management and Mitigation Advisor for the 1st Stryker Brigade Combat Team of the 25th Infantry Division, and he says some of the convoys will only travel to Salcha, then take a turnoff that leads to a training area east of Eielson Air Force Base.
Now, they're not all going down to Delta. Some of them are just going out to the Yukon training area down to Johnson Road.
Pinnell says U.S. Army Alaska will try to inform members of the public about when the convoys will be out on the highways, with advisories that USARAC will post on its Facebook page and on the Fort Greely Facebook page. And Greely spokesperson Jim Furcio says his installation also will try to keep the public informed.
Fort Greely will share information as best as we can as the information becomes available.
Also, the State Department of Transportation will include alerts about convoys on its travel advisory website, 511.alaska.gov.
So we have an alert that's on 511 throughout that whole period of time that they're going to be on the road.
Department spokesperson Danielle Tesson says the alert now on the site advises motorists that convoys will be traveling on the Parks Highway from Jaybear to Fort Wainwright through March 4th. She says DOT also is helping the Army identify passing areas to enable drivers to get by the convoys and other spots where the soldiers can pull off the road and let the cars go by. Both Pinnell and Whitish say the Army will do everything it can to help the public deal with the long, slow convoys. They urge people to check those information sources and plan their travel accordingly. And if motorists do encounter a convoy, the Army officials urge them to be cautious and patient. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
The Kodiak Emergency Operations Center has sent us a new update. 57 new cases have been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough since the last announcement on the 18th. The total case count is now 4,877 cases, with 92 cases currently classified as active locally.
Insight Daily Radio.
Mother of invention. How good ideas get ignored in an economy built for men is a fascinating and eye-opening examination of business, technology, and innovation through a feminist lens. While we talk about the Iron Age and the Bronze Age, we might as well talk about the Ceramic Age or the Flax Age, since these technologies were just as important. But inventions associated with women are sadly not considered to be technology in the same way. We spoke with author Katrine Marsall about this fascinating new book.
We talk a lot about electric vehicles today, and what many people forget is that they're quite an old form of technology. So, for example, when Henry Ford created the T-Ford, it was cheap enough for the workers in the factories to buy, and it turned cars from a luxury product to something that was on everyone's drive. But the same year that he launched this product, his own wife went out and bought a completely different car. She bought an electric vehicle. But what happened was that because the electric car got so associated with women, because it was slower, comfortable, safer, very good for sort of urban travel, not very good to sort of go very far distance, that it was thought of as feminine and many male consumers didn't want it. So in a way, the electric car industry held back the size of its own market at a very crucial time because of these ideas around masculinity and femininity.
That's author Katrine Marsall on her latest book, Mother of Invention, How Good Ideas Get Ignored in an Economy Built for Men, which has just been released.
Insight Daily Radio.
A housing needs assessment survey is coming soon to Kodiak. Help your community by participating in the survey, which may come by mail or via a phone call. Responses are anonymous and will be incorporated in a housing needs assessment document that will be available to the public. Those who complete the survey will be entered in a prize drawing happening each week in February. This message is sponsored by Kodiak Island Housing Authority.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 25th day of February, the year 2022. The sun rose at 8:13 this morning. It will set again at 6:32 this evening. That will give us 10 hours and 19 minutes of daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 57 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 54 degrees. That was set in 1936. And our record low was set in 1975 again, 0 degrees in 1975 on this date. 41 degrees out at the airport right now under a light rain. They have wind speeds to 16 from the southeast, gusting to 25. They're calling for a slight chance of showers after 3 p.m. today. Mostly cloudy skies, high near 44, south winds to 25, gusting to 40. For tonight, a 50% chance of showers, mainly after midnight. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 35 and southeast winds to 15, gusting to 20. For tomorrow, just a 20% chance of showers before 9 a.m. After that, they're calling for mostly sunny skies with a high near 43 and south winds to 10, becoming light and variable tomorrow afternoon. Looking at our local tides, we do have a low tide coming up here on the east side that will happen at just about 4 p.m., 3:54. It'll be 6/10 of a foot, followed by a high tide at 10:52 this evening at 5.5 feet. Our low tide for the middle of the night will be at 3:08 a.m. and be 3.9 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 9:39 a.m. and be 8.7 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 4:18 this afternoon. That will be 0.9 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 10:53 this evening at 9.6 feet. Your low tide for the wee hours will be at 4:14 a.m. and be 5.9 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow morning in Larsen Bay will occur at 10:11 a.m. and be 12.9 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Gale warning for today, south wind to 35 knots, diminishing to 25 knots this afternoon and seas to 20 feet. For tonight, south 20, seas to 17. For tomorrow, southwest 15, seas coming down to 11 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory today. East winds to 30 knots will turn to the south this afternoon, seas to 8 feet. For tonight, south 20, seas to 7 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, south 20, seas to 4 feet. The senior citizens of Kodiak's Board of Directors will be holding their regular monthly meeting in just a few minutes at 1 p.m. in the center's multipurpose room. Masks and social distancing will be required. The meeting is open to the public. For more information, give them a call at 486-6181. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a planning work session tomorrow. That's beginning at 9 a.m. and will be occurring in the Kodiak Public Library. Public participation is both in-person and virtual. The meeting will be web-streamed, and the link and packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any other questions, call the clerk at 486-8636. On Monday, the Assembly is having a special meeting. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall. Again, that's Monday, Borough Assembly Special Meeting, 6:30 p.m., Bayside Fire Hall. Also on Monday, the Consolidation Committee is having a meeting. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Conference Room. On Tuesday, the Women's Bay Service Area Regular Board is having their regular meeting. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. at the Women's Bay Fire Hall. And on Thursday, the Assembly will be having their regular meeting. That's occurring at 6:30 p.m. at the Bayside Fire Hall. The Kodiak Public Library is again open to the public. They are open from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Masks are recommended while in the building. Also on Monday, the library Zoom trivia game will be held. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. It's a humorous way to spend a Monday night with friends near and far. Find the Zoom link on the library's webpage and join the fun. If you have any other questions, call and contact the library at 486-8686. Island Trails Network is collecting submissions for their 12th annual Kodiak Outdoor Film Festival. That will be held Friday, March 11th, and the deadline to submit your entries is coming up quickly. It's March 4th, so get out there and start filming your adventure today, at least tomorrow. Visit the Island Trails website for guidelines. That's at www.islandtrails.org/film. The Coast Guard Marine Safety Detachment in Kodiak wants to remind you to check your date on the commercial fishing vessel safety decal in your window. If it's expiring soon or has expired, stop by their office downtown to pick up a checklist to prepare for your dockside exam. A safety exam is required for all commercial fishing vessels that operate more than 3 miles from shore, including transiting to the fishing area. Give them a call at 486-5918, or you can stop by their office in the subway building downtown if you have any other questions. And don't forget, the Kodiak Electric Association's Board of Directors has 3 seats up for election. The deadline for filing petitions is March 16th. Candidate petition packets are available by contacting the KEA office. To be an eligible candidate, you must be a member of KEA. Completed petition packets must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, March 16th at the KEA office. That's at 1614 Mill Bay Road. For more information, call 486-7700.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.